So Becky Russell, I think that wasn't enough. She is the director of the Perinatal Data Center at the March of Dimes National Office. She's responsible for the activities of the Perinatal Data Center. If you haven't gone to PeriStats, please check that out. It's National Center for Health Statistics data that Becky and her team do a great job with. You can make slides literally in 5 seconds on all kinds of interesting things. Okay, I'm taking up your time. She's worked on the 39 weeks quality improvement service package, which I'll talk a little bit about later as well. So that's, as we go on this journey, what we've done at the March of Dimes in terms of taking this toolkit, doing the pilot. You'll see the results, and then I'll wrap to talk about that. Becky received a Master of Science in Public Health from the University of South Carolina and a Bachelor of Science degree in Biology from the University of Georgia. Becky.
Woo-hoo.
Thanks. I'm really happy to be here today as part of this panel. This project has really been an amazing project to work on. And I think one of the keys, Leslie touched on a lot of it, but I think one of the keys to the success of this program really came through the leadership. And we had leadership across the board. We had strong state leadership. We had strong hospital leadership. And we had strong leadership from both Leslie and Scott. And so I think they were really true champions of this project. And so I think the results that we're going to talk about today are really, really quite a testament to that. My job today is to talk about the data. I think data is a really important, a critical component to any successful quality improvement initiative that's taking place. It's important that the hospital or the facility get the data that they need to track and monitor their progress as they're implementing these policies and procedures. And so my charge today is over the next 15 minutes to take you through a little bit of the data collection process that we used with this project, and then we'll talk about the results. So we'll show you what we did, how we did it, and what we found. I have no disclosures. To begin with, one of the key process points in this initiative was the adoption of the policies and the procedures that included the implementation of a scheduling form in all the participating hospitals. Because the focus was on changing the behavior around scheduling, it was really important that we use that opportunity to collect the data. So when a doc was going to schedule the procedure and they called to do the scheduling at the hospital, that was the opportunity that we took through the implementation of this scheduling form to collect that information. There was also some limited follow-up that we required to record what actually happened. So we were interested in finding, we wanted to collect what was scheduled to happen, what actually happened, and then we also wanted to know whether or not that infant spent any time in a special care nursery or a NICU. So there was some limited follow-up that was required, but most of the data that was collected occurred at the time of scheduling. While the hospitals used the form for scheduling for all of their deliveries, they used it regardless of plurality, so if it was singletons or multiples, and they used it for all gestational ages. The only data that was reported into us were deliveries, singleton deliveries that were scheduled at 34 weeks, 0 days, and greater. And they were submitted on a monthly basis through a web-based data entry system, which I'll talk a little bit about. The gestational age at the scheduled delivery date was assigned by the clinician based on the best clinical estimate. And the EDC was required reporting as well as the method by which it was determined. So for the majority of the study period, about 90% of the EDCs from the scheduled deliveries that were reported to us were based on an ultrasound less than 20 weeks. The hospitals entered their data on a monthly basis, and a series of data checks were performed once the hospital notified us that data was complete at the end of the month. The data that were collected, again, they were collected prospectively from the hospital each month, and it included aggregate counts of live births and fetal deaths by week of gestation. So at the end of every month, the hospital reported into us the total number of live births and fetal deaths by individual weeks of gestation. And then they also entered all of the individual delivery outcome data. In most cases, as I said, the data came from that scheduling form, and then the outcome data typically came from the labor and delivery logs. I just want to show you a picture of the scheduling form, and I know that might not be It might be a little difficult to read. There is a copy of it that's available in the toolkit. So if you go and download that from prematurityprevention.org or one of the other sites Leslie mentioned, you'll see a sample of that scheduling form in there. But you can see, let's see if my mouse works here. The top part of the form is just the scheduling information. That's information on the patient. That information is not submitted, was not submitted to us. That was really for the hospital's sake. Then there's the information on the dating, and then the indication for the scheduling. And you can see on the left-hand side of the form are the obstetric and medical conditions that we recorded, and then on the right side, the indications for elective inductions and C-sections. And then down here at the bottom, we provided a space to collect information on the cervical exam, but that was not submitted to us. So all of these data were then entered by one of the QI team members at the hospital directly into an online data portal. It's a secure web-based system which all hospitals accessed on a regular basis, and it provided a user-friendly, intuitive interface for data entry. So the data entry screen that was provided through the data portal almost directly mirrored the scheduling form. So it was really hopefully quite simple for the data leads in the hospitals to just take their scheduling forms and enter that data online for us. As I mentioned at the beginning, one of the keys to the success of this initiative was the reporting, that monthly feedback that hospitals received showing them their progress towards eliminating non-medically indicated deliveries less than 39 weeks. So at the end of the month, once the hospitals told us that their data entry was complete and the quality checks were performed, we ran reports that were sent back to the hospital by the end of the following month. So we really tried hard to keep very timely. When the month ended, the hospital got the data entered by the 15th of the month, and we tried to turn those reports back around relatively quickly so that the hospitals could see really almost in real time how they were doing, how they were progressing. The reports, we generated them through the data portal, and then they were created in PowerPoint, and those were sent out so that the hospital QI teams could use those reports as part of their departmental meetings and part of their QI process in the hospital. We did monthly and quarterly reports that provided them with several different measures, including rates and counts of non-medically indicated deliveries. We provided them with the percent of deliveries in which ultrasound less than 20 weeks was performed. We provided them with a means to track their NICU admissions and their overall gestational age distributions. So the reports that they got monthly were quite extensive. For each of those indicators, they were also given benchmarks so that they could see how their hospital was doing compared to other hospitals in their state and other hospitals overall that were part of the Big Five initiative. For those hospitals that were interested in it and they wanted to report to us individual providers for each of those cases, we did issue quarterly provider reports so that they could monitor and track how every one of their providers that delivered in their hospital were doing. And lastly, the Perinatal Data Center staff were available to run any ad hoc report that a hospital might be interested in. So if any given month a hospital saw a tick up in their non-medically indicated deliveries and they had questions about that, we were there we were more than happy to run those reports for them and help them really dig deeper into the data if they needed to. That was really how we approached this project and really making sure that that the hospitals had the data that they needed to really help inform their processes. So who were our hospitals? They were a diverse group. I have Leslie had mentioned that there were 26 hospitals. I'm showing the data here for 24. We had 24 hospitals that completed the data entry completely through the entire 12 months. So that's why I'm showing the data for 24 participating hospitals here. So they were a diverse group. Although the majority were located in large metropolitan counties, with between 2 and 5,000 deliveries annually. 70% were level 3 NICUs or regional perinatal centers, and 3/4 were nonprofit. That being said, we also had two hospitals that were located in non-metropolitan rural areas. We had four with a delivery volume of less than 500 births annually. We had three level one hospitals, and 12% of hospitals were governmental, and 12% were for-profit. So we really felt that there was a range of hospital types that were represented in our cohort. Throughout the 12-month period, the 24 hospitals had over 65,000 singleton deliveries, and they entered data into the portal on over 29,000 scheduled singleton deliveries at 34 weeks gestation. So this slide shows the main indicator that we tracked throughout the project, which was the percent of scheduled singleton early-term deliveries that were non-medically indicated. So this means that they had no obstetric or medical indication that was checked on their scheduling form, and they delivered at 37 weeks and 0 days through 38 weeks and 6 days. The green bars represent the total deliveries, and the dark line at the bottom is non-medically indicated inductions, and the yellowish line across the top is C-sections. So overall, participating hospitals reduced their early-term non-medically indicated deliveries from 27.8% of all early-term scheduled singletons to under 5% over the 12-month period. This was a statistically significant reduction of 83% over 12 months. The non-medically indicated cesarean deliveries declined 84% and induction 72%, and again, both of those were statistically significant. In order to examine whether the decrease we saw in non-medically indicated early-term scheduled deliveries was due to a shift in reporting classification, we looked at the outcomes for all singleton term deliveries. So we wanted to make sure that there wasn't a shift from non-medically indicated to medically indicated in a short period of time, and also not a shift into unscheduled. So we really wanted to make sure that the decline that we were seeing in the non-medically indicated deliveries was a true decline in non-medically indicated. So this graph shows the outcomes for all early term, but the trend was the same when we used all term as the denominator. So the purple bar at the top represents non-medically indicated early term deliveries, and that's the significant reduction that we saw over the 12 months. The yellow portion are the medically indicated, so all deliveries that had a medical indication, and you can see that that proportion didn't change over the time period. So we would have been concerned if we had seen a big jump in medically indicated deliveries, but we didn't. And then the green bars are those sort of the remaining singleton early-term deliveries that were unscheduled. And while it does look like those increased, that was not a statistically significant increase. The combined effect of those trends was that overall in the 24 participating hospitals, we saw that the percentage of all early-term deliveries in those hospitals declined, and the percentage of 39 to 41 weeks or full-term deliveries increased significantly. Also, as part of the QI process and monitoring of outcomes, we tracked NICU admissions among scheduled singleton early-term deliveries, and we also tracked fetal deaths for all deliveries. We did see a significant reduction in NICU admissions from 1.5 per 100 singleton term deliveries in the first quarter to 1.2 in the fourth quarter. The fetal mortality rate among all term deliveries, so 37 to 41 weeks, fluctuated over the four quarters, but there was really no discernible trend. And that when we stratified that to look at the early term period versus the full term period, we saw similar fluctuations. So there was no trend in fetal deaths over the 12 months. One limitation of the project was really an underestimation of the project's true impact in the hospitals because the lack of comparable baseline data prior to project implementation. The data collection that was done prospectively using a common scheduling form in all of the hospitals was really an integral part of the program and alone had the potential to impact change. So we couldn't implement the scheduling form and try to collect information to give us a good baseline data because just the fact that you had a form that someone was filling out at the time of scheduling has the impact to change behavior. And then conversely, to do a retrospective chart review of cases would not have really given us the level of detail to discern and really ensure that we were getting all of the scheduled deliveries. And so the data that were presented were really all post-implementation. If we get the graph, you could see during months one and two were much higher, and then there was a really sharp decline after that. So we feel that it's a pretty good estimate of the impact. And lastly, we showed significant reductions in a short period of time, but without comparisons from similar hospitals, it's difficult to ascertain whether there were external influences that on those rates and really what the long-term sustainability of the results are. However, most of the improvement did occur during the first three to five months and then was sustained throughout the remainder of the project period. We have several hospitals, several of the original 26 that are continuing on with the program, including data collection, and so we're looking forward to being able to monitor that and see whether or not they've been able to sustain the reductions. So despite those limitations, we were really able to demonstrate a successful model for implementation of a multi-hospital, multi-state QI initiative that showed significant reductions in non-medically indicated deliveries to less than 5% in a 12-month period. That's it. Any questions?
Plenty of speech up to questions.
I was just wondering why 75% of the hospitals are nonprofits. If they recruited or they just felt selected to be in this study?
Leslie could probably speak better to the recruitment process or the RF.
Yeah, the RFA. It was just a matter of which hospitals wanted to participate and apply. And we chose the hospitals were selected on their need and their ability to put together their quality improvement team. And then basic location within the state. So it was a request for proposal. It was competitive.
Were these first mostly Medicaid covered?
It varied from hospital to hospital. I think about half of our hospitals had half of their births covered by Medicaid. So it didn't. We really did try. Through the analysis phase of this to try to see if any of the characteristics of the hospitals really impacted their ability to make change. And there were none of the characteristics that we looked at. We looked at percentage of deliveries attended by a midwife. We looked at percentage of Medicaid deliveries. We looked at quite an extensive list of characteristics, and none of them really fell out as having a major impact on whether or not a hospital was successful. Actually, the largest indicator of success was where a hospital started with their rate of non-medically indicated C-sections. So if they had a high rate to begin with, they were much more likely to see change than hospitals that started with a lower baseline rate.
Did you actually collect the data to
We did not collect payer. The question was whether or not we collected information on each of the scheduled deliveries on who the intended payer was, and we did not.
Okay.